a study session tonight, and I see we have a lot of participation in the audience, so that's great. Would anyone like to make any changes to the agenda? I will report out the closed session. I'm just seeing, does anybody want to make any changes to the agenda?
Yes.
And what would that be, Mrs. Botwin?
Madam Chair, I talked to Mary Matakovich earlier, and because of the numbers tonight, pardon me, I'm sorry. Because of the numbers tonight, the personnel, the session was put where it is.
The study session?
I'm sorry. And in the past, in the past, we have had the reason for the study sessions, and we talked about this, is that the board would do its regular agenda and then stop and then have the study session. As if you all remember, like the TEACH program last year, we ended up going an hour beyond because we let it run till all our questions were answered and so on and so forth, even if it's a large group. But if there are extenuating circumstances, and Mary said that tonight there would be quite a number of people, teachers and others here, and I said that in the past we liked that. For one reason we liked it was because then we'd go through our agenda and here was this interested audience out there and sitting waiting with bated breath.
Captive would be more like it.
Exactly. And then I would like to have them and everybody know that this is the second half of the board meeting. And that it quite often happens that when we do it that way, we end up spending as much time as everybody wants discussing and working out problems and things of that sort.
Okay, Mrs. Botwin, I'll bring that up at the scheduling meeting with the superintendent, okay? But no changes for tonight?
No changes for tonight.
Thank you. We did meet in closed session before we came down here, and we discussed one matter of anticipated litigation but took no action. We also received some confidential official correspondence, which we discussed, and the board considered negotiations with the teachers and the other groups, SEIU and MEC. And CSCA. No action was taken. Now we would like to move to approval of the minutes. Is there a motion?
Move approval of the minutes for closing meeting.
Okay, second?
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? The approval of the minutes motion passes unanimously. I would like to take public comment before the study session because I think there may be a few people here that want to comment on something other than the study session. So do you have any slips, Mr. Unger?
I have not received any slips for public comment.
I believe there is a member of the public who wants to come forward. So would you please do so and identify yourself? It was a setup. You're right. I told her I'd get her out of here so she could go do her homework. Please identify yourself.
Hi, my name is Allie Andreen, and I'm here to talk to you oh so briefly about Virtual Enterprise. I know I've been here before, and I've talked to you all, and I've explained it all what it is. So now I just wanted to tell you a little bit about something that's happening tomorrow night. It's our fashion show and silent auction. I think Walt Millar is looking at a ticket over there. It's tomorrow, right in this very same room, from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. There's a fashion show from 6:30 to 7. There's going to be amazing appetizers from local chefs.
Are there any models in the fashion show sitting here at the table?
There are some models for the fashion show sitting here. My mother, Patty Andreen, and Chris Unger are confirmed models for tomorrow night.
And any others in the audience, such as maybe Mr. Jones?
Free, or say you're affiliated with education, you get in free. So hopefully
now that we've sold
us.
All the tickets, we're gonna invite the teachers for free. Is that right?
We are doing that. So thank you so much.
But they should bring their checkbooks.
They should bring their checkbooks.
What looks good with the sunglasses that I'll be wearing? I need a fashion coordinator.
I'm a little bit interested to see what glasses you're going to be wearing. The slip I received was neon orange swirls, so.
As long as they've got cheaters in them, I'm fine.
So I don't know, maybe something disco. Who knows? We'll see. Thank you so much.
I'll wear my medallions.
Oh, good.
Thank you. Okay. Any other public comment? Great. Then we will turn to our study session. And I'd like to ask everyone who's participating to come up and take a seat and remind you that the mics are important because people will be watching this afterwards on camera. So please, when you come up, if you're not sitting at the spot where there is a mic, pass it back and forth so that we can help AGP to make a good record of the session. I know it's going to be an important one. We will go off the air for just a moment to allow everybody to come up and take a seat that's participating. Thank you. Thank you. We've been joined by an august group of educators and parents and administrators that are here today, and we're very happy to have you all here. Also, a very large segment of the public is here, and we want to be sure that they understand that they're welcome to participate, too. So this is the way we like to see our study sessions, with a lot of engagement. And I'll turn it over to Jackie Kirk-Martinez and thank her for what I know must have been a lot of work in preparing for tonight.
Thank you. And thank you for allowing us to be here. Welcome to Special Education. On behalf of the staff and the parents here tonight, I'd like to thank you for giving us this opportunity to open up for questions and discussion. To begin with, one might say that special education is in my blood. My Uncle Sam was known to be the pioneer in special education, and he coined the term learning disabilities as we know it today. He was the first appointed director of handicapped children and youth, and he also researched early education and early intervention and helped to create the program that we have in our community, Head Start. Also, my aunt was a speech and language therapist who designed some assessments, so it's in my blood. I'm very passionate about special education, but for tonight, I will stay to the facts and the findings. Special education began over 40 years ago in the 60s, and through the years continued to be refined as what we know today commonly as IDEA, IDEA, or Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Today, IDEA includes broad mandates for the provisions of services to all children with disabilities, from the first grader with a speech and language articulation problem to a high school student or a junior high student with a history of emotional and behavioral difficulties, the college-bound high school student that might be getting around in a wheelchair. Despite the challenges involved with serving the heterogeneous group, the key concepts of IDEA have remained the same. To ensure that all children with disabilities have available to them a free and appropriate public education, better known as FAPE. To ensure the rights of the children and their parents or guardians are protected. To assist the state and our local agencies to provide for education of the children with disabilities. And then to ensure that the education that we provide to these children are implemented in a quality program. Some of the primary functions of special education is to assist with the child find, meaning searching for students in our community requiring special education. Once identified, continuing the special education process is is critical by providing quality, specialized program and services to all of our identified students. Special education must not only follow districts, but we also have the data collected for special education that we need to provide to the State Department of Education, who's monitored by the federal government. In order to fulfill the functions to serve our students, it takes the fine work of these professionals here that you see listed. This slide demonstrates the actual full-time employee, known as the FTE, from the special education budget. But in addition to this staff here on this slide, we must not forget the daily support provided by the principals, deans, counselors, bus drivers, secretaries, general education staff, nurses, site staff all over, and all of the parents. This slide shows our staffing has remained relatively consistent for our special education department, except for the paraeducators. This is due to the district directly serving some of our students with autism who were served previously by the County Office of Education, as well as the increase in the severity of some of our identified students. Fortunately, research and practice in the medical field has resulted in saving more babies' lives. However, it's resulted, some of the results have caused an increase in the need for special education services for these children. As you see in our district-wide enrollment has decreased with the blue-purple bar, so has our special education student population, relatively consistent with the district-wide enrollment. We are serving and have served approximately 8% of the total district population. Usually, through the student study or student success team process, or through parent request, we, the district, might determine that to assess a student for potential special education services. Over the last 5 years, we have completed initial assessments of over 764 students. As you can see, not all of these students are found eligible for special education, as shown in the light blue bar, and the district must continue to investigate alternative interventions for these students. Additionally, you see the purple bar significantly decreasing of the number of assessments. I believe this is because we are getting better at providing pre-referral interventions and supporting the student utilizing a variety of site supports. This next graph shows the service delivery. This slide shows the number of students who reside in our district boundaries but who are served by the County Office of Education. We provide financial support to the county to support these students. These students are still considered our community students. Frequently, we are involved in their IEP meetings and coordinate the services. One of the examples of a service we help to coordinate is transportation. This looks at students who we transport to and from school per their IEP. This means that these students may either need door-to-door, that means home-to-school, door-to-door transportation, have specialized physical needs, or who are bused to a school site other than their neighborhood school. We transport both district and county-served students. Currently, we are transporting 99 special education students. There is a specific law-driven process we must follow in special education, and I have combined the process and a timeline together. First, there is a pre-referral process where the school site provides general education interventions, also known as the student success team. They gather the staff together to look at additional ways to support the student before special education assessment. They hold the SST meeting, which is a positive school-wide early identification, early intervention process. Working as a team, the teachers, students, parents, administrators can identify students' strengths and their assets and develop an improvement plan to base their knowledge on. If during the SST meeting the team has determined that they need additional information, they will refer the student for an assessment. The assessment plan must be developed within 15 days after the decision to assess has been made. The assessment plan must include all areas of suspected disabilities. The parent is involved with the development of the plan, but the parent also has up to 15 days to consent for this assessment. Once the district receives the signed assessment plan, it has up to 60 days to test, score the test, develop a multidisciplinary of the IEP. Should the parent agree with the assessment and the recommendations presented, implementation of that IEP should begin as soon as possible. And every year, the team must meet, review, and revise that IEP. There are many other timelines in special education, which I will briefly share with you in just a moment. At the IEP meeting and at any time during the implementation of the student's IEP, the parent has many options to agree or disagree to any portion of the IEP. The parent can agree for total consent to the IEP, in which the district is able to implement all of the services described in the IEP. The parent can consent to portions of the IEP in which the district would only be able to implement the portions in which the parent has consented to. And then the parent can request a number of alternatives to meet resolution. First, they can meet with a resource parent. Resource parents are volunteers in our community to provide parent-to-parent support, specifically trained, willing to put aside personal issues, and able to use listening and speaking skills to facilitate communication, and they empower the parent to work within our educational system. The parent may wish to continue the meeting to another date in order to gather information or take into consideration what the team has put together. They may continue to meet by a formal facilitated IEP process. A facilitated IEP is which trained staff is a neutral facilitator who assists with opening up the lines of communication and uses conflict resolution techniques to reach resolution. The parent may meet with the director of student services to help in reaching a resolution and clarify some questions. The parent may wish to pursue solutions panel, or also known as alternative dispute resolution. And this is supported by the SELPA, the Special Education Local Plan Area in San Luis Obispo. It consists of usually three trained neutral panelists who meet formally with the parent and the director to assist in reaching a resolution. The parent may wish to pursue mediation for either mediation or due process. This slide is a more extensive timeline, but I'm only going to highlight the four red areas. The intent is to show you the many individualized timeline dates for special education, such as the first one in red, for every student who enters our district with an IEP outside of our county must have a meeting within 30 days of entering our district. If a parent requests records, student records, we must provide them within 5 calendar days. Whenever a student demonstrates the lack of anticipated progress, we need to hold an IEP meeting. And whenever a parent requests an IEP meeting, we have 30 days in which to hold that meeting. Each IEP for each student is implemented very individually, but all of them must contain program quality. Some of these qualities include goals that are written in a particular way that is both measured and measurable, and progress is reported to the parents as often as progress is reported to the general education student. Each goal must contain specific information, and it is quite an art to make sure these goals are met in these with this criteria. The services agreed to in the IEP could be any of these services depending upon the need of the student. Staff must be highly qualified and trained and do not only include special education certificated staff, but also paraeducators and general educators. These are not just No Child Left Behind requirements, but in specific areas as well. Some of the professional development that we have included this year is not limited to, but some of the highlighted areas, is assistive technology, autism, reading methodologies, behavioral supports, language and communication, and the development of social skills. We must make sure that all of those timelines are met. On IEPs, there are specific accommodations and modifications necessary for the student, such as, for example, goals that the team has developed. All of these services must be provided in the least restrictive environment. This means each student is to be educated as much as possible, depending upon the individual student needs, with other general education students. And again, it is according to their assessment, progress, and their IEP. And we do this, all of this in special education, in order to assist our students in becoming self-sufficient, happy, productive members of our future. Thank you for your time, and I hope this is added to your bank of knowledge in a nutshell. And I will now turn to the board who may have questions for the panel. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's really helpful. It gives us a context in which to understand some of the issues that come to us involving specific children in the district. Does anyone from the board want to start with a question? Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, thank you, Jackie. That was very nicely presented. Filled in a number of holes that I had, but only some. There's still quite a few left. At the very beginning, it talks about the child find and referral. Okay, using that as a basis, on page 7, I'm curious as to, at the top of page 7, under identification, it talks about screening, identification, so on and so forth. How does... What results in a child find and a referral? In other words, is it something from a teacher? Is it something from a parent? What happens then? How is this child originally recognized? That's what I'd like to know. And that then goes into the process.
I would like to ask a principal or a general education teacher to briefly discuss how the child is identified initially through the SST process.
Pass that mic around until it stops with the principal. Don, you're it.
I'm the winner. If I understand the question correctly, it's how the teachers or how the student is first identified that they might need some assistance. Is that what it is? Now that we have more of the data with the STAR test results and so forth, and all the printouts that we now have, the principals all go through the STAR results, and we can look at the results over time and see if we can see where there's issues going on. And so then we might take the initiative to say, okay, we're seeing a trend here that there's an issue that we're concerned about, and take it back to teachers and back to the team and say, is there something going on here that we need to look at? So it's at least in my experience, those would be the primary ways.
So, John, these are primarily then we have initiation coming maybe from a teacher, maybe from a parent, maybe from now that the testing's there, that the principals may be going through these and see and then go back. And any other red lights that we have in place? I'm thinking particularly of a child that's on the cusp that may not show up as one that needs special services until much later in the game, and by that time we've kind of lost him a bit. Any other red lights that we have there?
My response would just be a lot of the things, the way education has changed over the last few years, that we really stress knowing each child as an individual. So, you know, in past years, not all that long ago, we talk about teachers being a second grade teacher and they knew second grade curriculum. So they're teaching to a second grade class. Now teachers really know what each individual child is doing within that class. So if a child is having difficulty, they know where each child is, their individual reading level and their individual needs within that area. They do the running records and so forth. They do a lot of one-on-one assessment, not just sporadically, but continually. So there's all this one-on-one time. So there's less chance now, at least when I'm speaking at the elementary level, that a child's going to fall through the cracks like that. Then, quite honestly, you know, there was just a few years ago. Things have changed.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. What happens then once the, let's say, a fourth grader this year is being spotted and potentially, okay, I see some minor problems here. What's the, and the teacher's the one that's initiating it. What happens at that point? Where does that, do the teacher goes to the counselor?
With the student success team meeting?
Do they
It can be different at different schools. There isn't a set way how it would start, but they would take it to the student, the chair of the student success team or the principal, however it's set up at individual schools, and then a meeting would be called, parents notified, and get together and you go through the process of talking about it. When you meet for the process, it's a very positive process. You start out by listing the child's strengths, very positive talk about, because every child, no matter how many difficulties that child may be having, the child has strengths, and it's very important. So what has already been done in the classroom or within the school or at home, outside of the school, to address those concerns? Okay, so all this has been going on and we still have concerns, then what actions can be taken? What can be done next? And it's kind of a brainstorming session.
Thank you. Just if I could interrupt a minute, I think Linda Olson wanted to help with an answer to your question, Mrs. Botwin. So.
I think I wanted to add to that. Oh, you already got up to the high school, but I want to take you back down and remind everybody here, I think we know that San Luis Coastal also has a preschool early education program, goes by the acronym PEEP. And so lots of times we get kindergartners that already have individual education plans due to search and serve. And before that, we also have those students with IEPs from birth, 0 to 3 years old, in the county program. So that's another early search and serve that comes to us before we even get busy with them.
In addition to what Linda and Don has shared with you, we can also, we do receive referrals from our counselors, of course, from administrators. And then recently, for example, as we test incoming ninth graders from Laguna, for example, we administer a reading test. The reading assessment has allowed us to identify some students who may have slipped through, either as a new student in the district or someone who has just gradually shown a pattern.
Nice to know that. I appreciate that information from all of you. One last question on that is, I didn't see in here, but I may have missed it. What are the stats today for finding these students, picking them up, whether in elementary or junior high, as opposed to, let's say, John 5 years ago? Is it in here? Have they significantly increased in that we have more red lights in place? Or have our kids gotten more capable etc.
Are you asking how many SST meetings we hold per year? We keep that information. We also had a slide in here that showed how many initial assessments we provided over the last 5 years. So I'm not sure which one.
Okay,
you're
I missed
for.
That, and I was probably reading something else. How many have we had over the last 5 years?
764 assessments. Initial assessments. That means first time assessed for special education.
Is that for the last 5 years total or just for the last year? How many per year? Has there been an increase, Jackie? That's what I'm...
Of assessments?
Yes.
No, for initial assessments, there has been a decrease.
Who's on the team? Did I hear Don Nicholson say it's different at different sites, too?
I believe it is different at different sites. I just know it happens at Bishop's Peak. And we have Administrator Dawn, and then I'm the resource teacher. So I'm at all the SSTs. We have an SST chairperson who's a general education teacher. Then also you have the school psychologist will often come in. Sometimes the speech and language, if we think it's a speech and language issue, we'll ask them to come as well. The counselor will come if we think that, they'd be beneficial. It depends on the student and what they're being seen for as well. The parent is also there. And the regular education teacher that may have done the referral. But I was thinking about your question, and I wanted you also to know that in addition to the services that everyone was talking about, the resource teachers at each school site, the majority of us also see what we call site-based students, which means they haven't gone all the way to a IEP yet, but we're servicing them like an RSP student with learning disabilities in the special education setting prior to having an initial evaluation. So that's also part of it. It's more, we do the brainstorming, we give the regular classroom teacher some good strategies to use in the classroom, we all talk about it, and then the next step after that would possibly be site-based services, and then if those still aren't working, maybe they're not intensive enough, we would look at maybe going for a full evaluation. So that's also part of the SSD process, is to recommend, well, let's try site-based services first to see if he just needs a little kickstart, or she needs a kickstart, or is it something even further that we have to dwell into?
Mrs. Roger? One of my questions might already have been answered. Is student success team what used to be called a student study team? Okay, really like the change in that.
Is that just district, or is that just a district change in vocabulary, or is that statewide?
That's a district.
That's what I was wondering.
As you'll see, I say success team,
yeah,
so
okay.
I'm still changing my brain pattern.
It just puts a great, you know, thrust right there in the beginning.
Marilyn, may I
yes.
ask a follow-up to what you just did, what
sure.
you just asked? Is the implication, I'll give it right back to you. Is the implication in changing the name to student?
Parent is a key player in the student success team. Without the parent, you don't have the team.
So from the very beginning,
absolutely.
The parent's involved. And then does it ever occur that a parent or a guardian does not want to agree to having the child evaluated at all? That they would, you know, they don't feel that there's a problem? And if so, what happens then?
Yeah, the parent does not have to have the student evaluated. We cannot do any kind of evaluation without parental consent. It cannot happen. So, and that is a federal law. We can't. So we continue to SST, and there are some students, and I can think of some at our school, that have SSTs multiple times, year after year after year, because these same issues keep coming up, but the parent is not willing to take that next step to go further with any kind of evaluation.
To create an IEP.
To do a formalized even an assessment of what the disability could be. We're not saying the child has one, because we don't know until you're fully assessed. But some parents are unwilling to even to go to that step to find out.
Okay, thank you.
Can I add something to that?
Yes.
Fortunately for the child, the district or the site can still advocate for that child to receive unique interventions, such as a school-based resource program learning center. And our district has school-based sites, all of them are school-based sites, where we can serve that child in the resource program and utilize unique techniques without an identification of special education.
So you might have a student who is being served by the school resource teacher, but who actually needs a wider breadth of services. But if the parent doesn't want to do that, then the resource teacher just has to do the best they can. Would you say that's
the team? Right. The team works collaboratively and utilizes the different strategies. Now, law recently changed in that. Before, we were required, the district was required to file for due process as an advocate to the child and force the
resource parent. I was unclear on what that means. Would that be a parent of a special needs child from the community who would who would relate to the other parent sort of as a friend or share experiences or can you explain that to me, please?
Absolutely. You're correct in all of it. The SELPA offers resource parent training, and the district recognizes some of the parents with special needs students who are great facilitators to help get information to other parents, and they are a support network. We have parents here tonight that are parent support to each other, and sometimes they can break down the special education language in a way that us educators aren't helping them to understand. And they are trained facilitators to help support them, and they're neutral, but they put aside their personal issues, but they're also parents that may have had a challenging time in the system and can help them get through the system easier by what they've learned.
Thank you very much.
At any time, if any parents would like to speak about their experience on either end of that, you're more than welcome. And all you have to do is just...
I do too.
Bob Wilson?
Yeah, well, you may not want me to start talking because you probably won't get me to quiet down. But anyway, I would like to just say, as a consumer of the services in question... I'm old enough now to be able to say, well, when I was a kid, and get away with it. But seriously, folks, when I was a kid, special education was so primitive, and the whole societal structure in the schools at that time seemed to be geared towards stigmatizing those children that were involved in special education. And what I see now is that the societal structure that we have, again, has been so successful in minimizing the stigmatization of our children that are involved in this, and it's been very, very successful. And furthermore, the children that used to be in classes were not picked up and were not handled by the special death. And without these folks, I would fear greatly for what Mark's future would be. And so, to me, you guys are literally a godsend. And thank you all.
Thank you very much.
If you guys have any questions or, you know, you want to know how I got involved in it or whatever, you're more than welcome.
Well, we're thankful that you came, and we are glad to hear those good words about your experience. I think Mr. Spadafore and Mrs. Dickinson, I'm not sure who was first. Okay. Go ahead.
I just have a few questions, and I'm also really eager to hear a little bit just from everybody who came. I wouldn't mind, hearing something from all of you who took time out to be here. But I'm curious about the delivery model at the how special day class and resource work together, and how they're different and alike at the high school and junior high, and how many kids are identified at the high school level. If you have any ballpark ideas about that, I'm curious about that, because often high schools don't want to admit new people to special education for some reason. Since I teach special ed, I'm also curious about, you know, what you do to support the teachers so they don't get burned out, because I think special education teachers have a very, very demanding job. An extreme amount of paperwork and, just exhausting kind of interaction requirements through a day. So I'm interested in the support. And also there is, you know, very much less stigmatism than there used to be. But since
Mrs.
I do
Dickinson,
teach special education,
I think there's some answers coming. Why don't
I want them all to go around and answer everything. I want to say one last thing, then I'm done. Teaching it myself, I know that students do still feel somewhat stigmatized at times. And I always tell them that special education is not an adjective for a person. It's a program. You can't be a special ed kid. You know, it's a program. And that all people have disabilities. All of us have things that we're not good at. And we all have gifts and strengths. So you, my students, are lucky enough that you have been identified and are given support for your areas of disability, where some of us, you know, are struggling along without too much help in our weaker areas. But I think we all have strengths and weaknesses, and to keep it in that context. So I'd like to hear from everybody.
Well, I think I'll begin. I'm Linda Campeggi, and I am a resource specialist at Morro Bay High School, so I could probably one little bit of a difference between elementary and the high school. We have a, for lack of a better word, I'd like to call it a floating program at the high school. So we may have students, and Brad, help me out here. We have students who are fully mainstreamed. We have students that may come in for direct instruction in one class, such as English or math. We may have students who are taking various special ed classes, but maybe their strength is math, so it might be a higher level special ed math class, but maybe a different level English class. So they may have a variety. They will have a variety of special education teachers. The old special day class model really isn't there, where they have only one teacher all day long. That doesn't exist at Morro Bay, and I don't think it exists at San Luis High as well. So that's all. That, when you asked about the program, I'm trying to remember all the questions you had. Can you remember them?
How many are identified ballpark in high school level into special education program?
You mean during high school itself?
During high school.
Do you have the numbers?
I have the numbers for this year. It's a real small print. For San Luis High, 111 students currently. More.
As of 119, we have 97 students.
Okay, this was December 1st count. and then Morro Bay High, 63 students.
But I mean new, that they haven't been in, they haven't had IEPs until high school.
Oh, until high school. I don't have that with me.
Determined to be eligible.
Well, the numbers are far fewer than elementary. And anywhere, Brad helped me out, but I would say an average of maybe 2 to 5.
Yeah, I think every year.
Your mic.
Every year, we seem to identify, someone new. Some years more than others, but as Linda says, you know, it's the elementary and junior high where they really get the bulk of the identification. I'd like to say something about the stigma. We work really hard on not having that happen, and at Morro Bay High School, it doesn't happen. But we have kids coming through the resource room every day, continuously. With all different ranges of abilities, you know, kids that aren't identified, ELL kids, gifted kids, and special ed kids. So it's an open door, and teachers and students see it as...
Have had an SST or haven't had an SST, but they want to help that student individually, and they will often come to us and ask us for materials, and we share whatever we have with them.
Could I ask a follow-up question to the high school folks? Recognizing that there have been changes in the administration of the California High School Exit Exam, one of the concerns I had was that we might see an increase in special education referrals to the high school. Have you had any indication of that? Is that something that may or may not become reality as we look toward probably 2007-2008?
You know, that's a possibility. San Luis Coastal, though, has been quite fortunate. You know, there aren't that many kids who still need to pass it by the time they get to their junior, senior year. And this will be the first year where a student might be denied a diploma if they can't pass that exam. I anticipate more kids possibly being referred, but the district's having a lot of programs put in place now to give those kids a lot of extra time. We've started new classes just for kids that haven't passed the exam. So, you know, we're looking for, you know, all kids passing the exam.
Thank you.
Mrs. Dickinson, did you want to follow up at all? And then we're going to go to Mr. Spadafor.
The burnout question, support for teachers.
I would agree with you. Our teachers in special education, I can't say enough about them. They are they promote the success of every individual student. For our teachers who have individualized programs that are specific to one student because of their very special needs, being an autistic student or a Down syndrome student, you're talking about a teacher who is not only ensuring that every individualized educational plan is met for their students in their classes, but then again prepping for a special needs student of autism or Down syndrome. And those teachers are extremely dedicated to the nurturing of those children, both emotionally and academically. I just cannot say enough about the time and the dedication of these teachers. In addition to them, I would actually say that our SCIAs, our individual paraeducators, one-on-one paraeducators, they just devote their they make a huge difference in the lives of these children and with the parents. The daily contact almost with the parents is tremendous. So I value them deeply. I can't say enough about them. And I also want you to understand that at San Luis Obispo High School, we also have an ED program, which Jane DeVincenzi can also explain to you.
I would like to hear about that, but I wonder if Mr. Spadafore wants to ask his question first, and I would like to come back some more answers on that. Thank you. Okay, John, is that okay with you? We'll go to Sandy Sack, elementary teacher.
I'm a first-grade teacher at C.L. Smith, and I would say the last 6 years of my teaching career has involved some mainstreamed or direct instruction for just a specific class of children with autism or Asperger's. I can't say that I have every teacher's idea about it, but my idea is that they're just another part of my classroom. And what's neat about it is the extra support you get. I have everybody from the secretary to the custodians to the principals to the speech and language resource. I mean, everybody. The ASCIAs, I can't even think of what Jackie's or Katie's position. I don't really know what her position is. But I mean, Autism Services, SELPA. I mean, I have so many resources that I actually kind of ask for these children because it helps all my kids. And I just, the autistic kid is just another one of my kids. I just get extra support with them. And quite often, they're not the handful as the kids who have not been identified yet or haven't been through the SST program. So for me, there isn't a burnout. And I receive a lot of support with training every year, too.
I would also just want to add, too, that with our school psychologists, as well as Julie, who's a specialist for the special ed department district-wide, all of these individuals make a difference. Janet makes a difference. Crab, who can settle us down when we get a little anxious. And, of course, Jackie's expertise in redirecting us and providing more direction just in terms of understanding the law and providing those necessary support systems for our students and reminding all of us this is what we need to do for our children to be successful.
Education to a student, a particular student, what kind of issues do you face and what kind of changes would you ask for? What kind of, what would help in terms of classroom environment? In terms of time management for yourself or for other people on the team, transitioning between one program to another, assessment, grading, testing, the whole portion of your job, everything that you come into contact with, behavior issues, and then staffing issues, just to hear from you. What would be your suggestions? What areas do you think could use improvement? What information do you want to bring to us? Because, I mean, I couldn't think of all the questions to ask you.
That's pretty open-ended, and I would like to just go around the room and ask anybody who hasn't spoken yet, who has responses to that, to feel free to jump in. Okay? Mrs. Kempeki?
I've spoken, but I have a response.
Perfect. You'll break the ice for the others.
I have a concern, and I'd like to share that concern. At the high school level, any student that comes to us who is able to follow simple directions, who has listening skills, who can somewhat interact with other students. I can work with any of those students, and I can develop a program, I can modify the curriculum, I can meet those students' needs. The concern that I think some of us at the secondary level have is that we are being told that there's going to be an increased population that that do not have those basic skills. And to provide them with an academic, social, emotional program that at a public, integrated public high school setting is absolutely undaunting to me, you know, because it's so different than what I went into special education to do 20 years ago. And some of the students that we think we may be getting are profoundly disabled students. So when you ask a concern or a need, that's where my concern is.
I can't help but wonder where that information is coming from. Is that coming from within the district? Is that tracking students that are already here?
Educators, and we're very fortunate enough to have her here with us in our district.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yeah, I actually have a local and a statewide perspective. And Linda's concern is absolutely real and is echoed here in our district and statewide. And the short answer is, but prepare yourselves because these students are coming, because that's the law. We have a team process, an IEP team process. And the law has been pretty clear about the fact that the provision of a free and appropriate public education is what is important. The location of that provision is, I won't say secondary, but not as paramount as the provision of the free and appropriate public education. Therefore, we have seen, and we will continue to see, parents who will advocate that their children who may have severe disabilities be provided their education in a regular education setting, which does present challenges to the student, to their classmates, to their special educator, to the regular educator, to the administration, and that's real.
And is part of that a change in the law in terms of the way the decisions have been favoring provision of services for this type of child at the regular site, or is it unrelated to the law and just related to the nature of the disabilities that we're seeing?
No, it's based in the law.
It's the law.
I mean,
okay.
The law provides for that, and as the evolution of the education has progressed, the issue has become more and more, you know, cogent. We used to have TMR classes and EMR classes.
That stand for?
Thank you. Trainably mentally retarded and educationally mentally retarded. We don't have those labels anymore. We have qualifying criteria, 13 or 11? I always get mixed up. One's regional center and one's 12. 13. 13. Regional center has 11 qualifying conditions, I think. So one can qualify to receive special education services through one of 13 different doors. But once you're inside that big tent.
Which means the site, right?
Which
no,
means?
The site, the school site?
No, least not restrictive, a most restrictive environment would be a class that is totally segregated in a different location, possibly a different campus. If you are familiar with Loma Vista DCH, where the County Office of Education now is, that used to be, when it was first built, the Developmental Center for Children with Handicaps. And the children with the most severe disabilities receive their education out there. Now, if you've been out there, you know there's nothing else around there. Those children who still continue, obviously, to be born and flourish, now are housed at different sites. school sites in the county. There is a wonderful site just adjacent to San Gabriel called San Gabriel West in Atascadero. There is another site at C.L. Smith. We have sites in our district as well. But these sites are, and they're all over. They're integrated, and they're deliberately integrated so that not only can the children with disabilities have the benefit of being with their peers, but their peers can also have the benefit of being educated amongst different people, diversity. We're not just talking about cultural diversity here. We're talking about diversity as individuals. So it's a challenge. It's a real challenge to provide the very best education that we can for all of our students, those who have visible challenges and those whose challenges are less visible.
Okay, Mr. Unger, thank you very much. And then I don't want to forget to come back to Jane because...
Mr. Millar, too.
I don't know how we're going to go. I'm going to ask Mr. Millar, and we've got...
I want to comment on what...
Mrs. Simon, okay.
Follow up on what Mrs. Blakely said.
Okay, we have two follow-ups to what Naomi Blakely said, and then I'm going to go over to take Lisa Simon, and then we're going to come back to Jane DiFincenzi, and we're going to go to Rose Fowler. Okay? Help me stick with that, if you would.
I was going to yield to the follow-up people.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Millar.
And I guess one of the things that has been discussed in the district and at different schools sort of relates to the chart that's on the bottom of page number 5. When I look at page number 5, I see that it's on school campuses that may not be reflected in this. In other words, high impact, again, I think what Mrs. Blakely was talking about, some high impact necessities on campuses that wouldn't be necessarily shown by number of students or total special education services, but the impact of the student in a regular education class it seems to be seems that it has a great deal more impact, I'm going to use that word again, than what's reflected here. And I know that that's been a concern from some people, and so I realize we have a lot of other people who have follow-up questions, but I think that's something that should be addressed this evening as well.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Did you want to say something directly related to what Chris just said?
I would, because I wear two hats in this district. Not only am I a resource teacher, but I am a parent of a child with autism who receives services at Baywood Elementary in the special day class. And when I have my mom hat on, she's in fourth grade. She's been in special day class her whole life. I am scared to death for her to go to the junior high in a couple of years because there is no special day class, and that's all my daughter knows. And so I'm on the little bit of the opposite side of the spectrum from a lot of parents that only want their child fully included. I am scared to death to have my child just completely fully included with no support. I mean, how is she going to get from place to place? She doesn't have an aide right now, and she never has had one because she's always been in a very small classroom environment. There's only 9 students in her special day class. And it works wonderfully for her. Part of her, you know, disability includes communication disorders, and she speaks very well. She's very high functioning at this point, but she has a very low academic level. She only reads at the first grade level, and she's in fourth grade. So we have to look at that going into, as you were speaking of, how is that going to impact her when she gets to junior high and high school? And I know in 2 years it's not going to all of a sudden jump up to be, you know, sixth grade level. And on top of that, her social disorders, where she has her a couple of friends in her special day class, but the minute she, I don't know what we're going to do. I'm nervous and I'm scared as a parent to think of my daughter just kind of thrown in there with everybody else and not having the support. And yet I really don't want a one-on-one aide with her because she, I want her to be independent. And at this point, she can now finally go into the cafeteria with her group, and she can walk out by herself. you know, as opposed to having to have a teacher or somebody with her. But still, there are those issues where that make me nervous as to what could happen to her walking into a bathroom by herself at the junior high and things like that. On the other
side, I have
to
say that the fears that I hear you expressing, I hear expressed by most parents whose kids are going
to the junior high.
Yeah, I mean, there's something about parents. We freak out when our kids hit junior high.
They're so scary.
They handle it usually better than we think they will.
I know.
I mean, most of my friends felt that way about junior high. I think it magnifies all our fears of separation and them having to function.
But then,
and it's
magnified and when you have a student with a handicap. But I do look into like the regular class. How is she going to do things like get out, dressed out for PE when I still help her dress in the morning? And you know, there are those issues. As a resource teacher, I have the other side where I have all these students mainstreamed, and resource by nature was a more mild. We dealt with more students with what they considered mild disabilities, those with learning disabilities, typically. But it hasn't, it's changed over the years, and it has become so, I'm just a special education teacher, really, because there's no just small group instruction with kids with learning disabilities. I have autism and other health impaired and behavior disorders and, you know, emotionally disturbed. Everything comes through our door. Because the parents do want their students mainstreamed. And so when I'm looking at a student that has a learning disability in math and all I'm working with them is maybe three or four times a week on math, that counts as one student on my caseload, whereas my student that has autism, who's 45% of the day with me and has all these special demands where I'm working on social, behavior, academic, communicative skills with this child, and takes up a large percentage of my day, is still counted as one person on my caseload. And I know we're not in the habit of weighing students, but it is a huge difference between this child on my caseload and what I have to do for this child on my caseload. And in my case, I'm not 100% at one school site teacher with what they're going through, you know, instead of just in, out, in, out, in, out, and then dealing with my behavior disorders that are going around as well. So,
okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
If I may add, I think, John, you asked a question about transitions, and I think what you're seeing here tonight with Linda, and I'm sorry I forgot your name, Monica, are the concerns, that transition of seeing more of these students with specific needs. And I think that both the parents and the teachers need assistance in that transitioning to learn more, to understand how to work with these students, because it is daunting. I've seen two of our staff members specifically work with these students who are being mainstreamed, and it is another prep. It's hours and hours and hours with a student, but I must add that you know, Jackie and her staff is helping us, but there's just a few of them and so many other needs. So that transition needs to occur. And I think that would echo true at our site in terms of what Linda has shared with you.
Thank you, Mrs. Parsons. I still have a list of people that I want to have speak, and we have someone from the audience, Tony Evans. Tony, I'm gonna put you next just because you're there. You must have a burning one.
I don't know that I can stand, so I could wait my turn. John was talking about impacts, and I didn't want to, because I hear, not because I'm dealing personally with full inclusion students, but because I'm dealing with the people that are dealing with full inclusion students, I get a lot of concerns that are addressed to me. And I do, this whole conversation that we're having this evening, it started out with a discussion. One of the reasons it started was because, you know, it was talk about it. You know, coming and meeting the needs of all these students that we're getting, and particularly our high impact students, and all the procedures and processes and things that are connected to them, and so the idea of adding administration, and you know, I want to keep that focus, an additional administrative position, but I want to keep the focus that it is, there is a lot of employee issues out there in terms of managing not only all of our special education students, but in particular some of our high impact special ed concerns or students. And you know, I would start with the elementary resource teacher, and I'm questioning, and these people are at virtually every SST. That's a lot of SSTs. You know, one or two students can equate to a huge amount of time and do not represent just one child in a caseload. I think there's concerns about principals, the site administrators, because in many cases, they're spending a whole lot more time working with individual children on behavior management issues. They're also that filter. They're that first one there to deal with the parent concerns so that the regular ed teacher can be doing his or her job. And you know, and so there a lot of time being expected of the principals in this regard, and they're involved in these extended IEPs that sometimes go on for days, weeks, on and off for years, and I'm not kidding. And then, of course, I've talked about the regular education teacher who, again, extended IEPs, meaning they're getting sub time. They're being deposed for hearings. They are dealing with huge numbers of observers coming into their classroom. They're dealing with all of these specialists. And though they're enthusiastic about the challenges of working with an individual child, they also, I think, we do hear about stress. And finally, there's the question of expertise. I mean, as much as we'd like to be able to wear every hat we can, you know, teachers are encountering students for whom they do not have just at their side a ready supply of ways of dealing with them. And how do you bring that regular ed teacher up to speed is a real question. And how, you know, medical procedures, who performs them? You know, is that the role of the teacher, the paraeducator? I mean, this is a major concern for us because it has liability issues connected with it.
What do you mean by medical procedures? Just so
this,
I know.
This could be any number of things, from changing diapers, reading the diabetes test, the blood test for that. It could be clearing trachs. It could be, you know, performing, giving emergency shots or injections. It can be palpitating, yeah, and so I mean, it just goes catheterization. It goes on and on, and it's like, you know, we're real concerned about our teachers being involved in potentially high liability areas, especially in areas for which they have little options. This child, you know, if you get him in one grade, you're probably not going to see him either evaluated, assessed, or put into a program until the following year. And this has been a real issue when we get children that have a tendency to violence. I mean, teachers are being asked to deal with some highly emotional students who are not easy to control. And they're in there in the regular ed classroom while they're going through all the processes and the procedures and the timelines and everything else. And so, I, you know, those are many of the sort of personnel management or concerns that I am hearing from on a regular basis and that I wanted to make sure that you heard about this evening as well. And hopefully some more of my colleagues will step up and let you know a little bit more about what those impacts are, the victories, the challenges, and some of the downside of the workloads associated with bringing in full inclusion students and so forth. Thank you.
I would like to just add that it's not only the teachers, but it's also the paraeducators who are impacted. So don't forget those support people in the classroom. And also different sites have different, I guess, procedures, if you will, or expectations in terms of when IEPs are held, and I would imagine that is affected by the number of special ed students. Now, unlike Morro Bay, our students, our teachers hold their IEPs after school as well, and they can go to 4:15 or beyond. So there is no compensation for these teachers. Again, that's additional time that they are preparing and then also extending themselves on behalf of the children and their parents.
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to see if any board members now have anything they need to say right away, or can we go to some of these people that haven't spoken yet? Mrs. Dickinson, and then I've got three people I know that want to speak that haven't spoken yet.
This is, you may have some answers for this. I'm sure some of you have taken that current issues in special education class at Cal Poly, and it's taught by different people, different quarters, but I'm taking it this quarter with Dr. Nauman. And it seems to me that, I mean, you know, all these things start with laws, with legislators who may or may not have any experience in classrooms. And I'm not sure they really meant, you know, when they passed these laws, for teachers to be dealing with, you know, trachs and things. But then they get out into the arena of the real world, and lawyers start interpreting the laws, and cases go to court, that it's best for students to be fully mainstreamed and included. I mean, least restrictive might be special day class instead of regular ed for the benefit of the student. So those are my questions.
Okay, would you keep those questions in mind? And I'm going to go to, I think I said that I would go to Lisa Simon next, and then Jane Rose, and whoever else has not spoken yet.
In my quest to serve the community by serving on this board, I talked to many parents throughout the district. And during that time, several questions arose. And I had emailed these to Mrs. Roger and Dr. Valentine. And one of the issues that I'm seeing is parent frustration with the process, the time lags, dealing with the bureaucracy, not much true guidance of what the next step is. How do they get that information? So when you were asking Mr. Spadafore about what kind of, you know, issues or, you know, is everything really going as perfectly as it sounds like it is, that's one thing that I have truly seen is what written information in clear, understandable language is out there for parents about the process. How does that really get to them? I have several friends, and I requested from Jackie Kirk-Martinez the parent handbook, and thank you, and Jackie gave it to me. I talked to other friends who have kids who are in special ed and said, did you ever get this parent handbook? And they said no. So there may be some materials, but how are we getting those materials out to the parents? I met with Dr. Alan Hilton last Friday from SELPA, and he mentioned a series of different classes that are offered to parents of special needs children. And again, how are we educating the parents about what classes are available? So it's, you know, the process information, removing roadblocks for parents, and letting them know what resources and sources are out there. Those are my issues, my questions.
Okay, thank you. And it may be that someone from the district wants to answer that, and if they do, just let me know. Good questions, and I wrote them down. Linda? No, it was Rose. I'm sorry, it was Rose. I knew it was over in this corner. Sorry, Rose.
I just want to let you know that when I have a parent of a special needs child and I hear of educational opportunities for that parent, I usually contact that parent and let them know of the availability of that. Sometimes it goes in the newsletter. If it's more global, if there's more than a couple of students that it might be of interest to, but then the parent has to stay abreast of that information by reading the newsletter and taking advantage of the opportunity, and that's sometimes the barrier to the information getting there. I wanted to go back to Mr. Spadafore's question about quantity and the number of students that we're going to be having. I was at a workshop today. We do have intense reactions to situations that we are learning how to handle, but it is getting up to speed on those. So when I hear that there are 2- and 3-year-olds coming in greater number than we already have, it is going to take additional resources in the future to be able to handle these students and incorporate them either in the mainstream classroom or within special ed services. Typically, they're bright enough and verbal enough. They're not identified right away. They're not failing in school, but their behavior issues need to be identified. That was the other issue I wanted to address. Counselors also are on the yard, and they see individuals. I don't necessarily see how academically talented or deficient they are, but I can certainly see how socially they perform on the yard. And sometimes I'm the one that identifies the student and goes to the teacher and says, how's this guy doing, or how's that student doing? And then we can call an SST so we can get some more background information that maybe the parent has that we aren't aware of yet. Another problem that occurs at the elementary level is that sometimes parents aren't ready to hear that they might have a special needs student, and that takes a lot of time for the teacher, for the special ed teacher, for the counselor, for the principal to work with that parent to be able to get in a place where we can even talk about having a student study team and put in services in place to try and head off some of the academic problems or behavior problems that they might have. In addition, they talked about special day class for violent students. That's a possibility, but the parent has to agree to having that student moved into a special setting. So sometimes, even though they've been identified and we've decided that another setting might be better for the student and for the classroom in general, we still have to have the parent's consent to be able to make that move. And that sometimes takes an additional amount of time, sometimes years. The other thing I wanted to let you know was that the resource teacher typically is the case manager for these students, and it does become a problem. They're the ones that, in my mind, that's like the mom to the child. They're the ones that know the most about that student. If I don't have a resource teacher at my site full time, it's like that child doesn't have a mom, and they can go amok pretty fast. So I would advocate that those resource teachers, even though their FTE numbers are only justified to a certain degree by the number of students that are identified, sometimes those students have more needs than one student, and that having a person on campus that knows that student intimately and that's there all the time provides a safety net for that.
And we have a class at the elementary level, one at the middle school, and two at the high school. And this is my, I think, 15th year with the district, and I believe we've had ED classes now in our district for 8 or 9 years, and I've been with the ED classes for all of during that entire time. We started out with an elementary class, then added a middle school class, then added a high school class, and last year added our second high school class. And I've worked as an elementary counselor. I started back in 1981, so I've worked with kindergarten now through 12th grade. I've seen the whole gamut of special ed, and I now worked with some of the highest risk kids in our district. I do firmly believe that students should be in the least restrictive environment whenever possible. However, as some of you have been speaking tonight, when you do have a student with high needs, whether it's emotional or behavioral issues, they do need a more restrictive placement. In our programs, we have a highly trained teacher who's had many additional workshops and training, so they know how to deal with a lot of the behavioral issues we have. We have two aides in a classroom. We try to keep the numbers of children under 10. I come in the class 2 to 3 times a week. We also have a mental health therapist that comes in and help with our students. There is a lot of support. In addition to the school staff, we have the student services staff with Jackie and Naomi and Julie and all the school psychologists and the nurses, and the support we have is absolutely tremendous. It's wonderful, and it is what someone said, what keeps you going. It's the support we have, because we have an amazingly challenging job, and every day we go home exhausted. And it's a good thing we get a good night's sleep, because coming back the next day is not always easy. But I love my job, or I would not come back every day, every year. And someone asked a question, I think it was you, John, you know, are there any needs that you have? And I think one of the challenges that, in addition to working with highly emotional and behavioral problems that we additionally face now, is having to help our children, but the high school kids, pass the exit exam. And this is something that we have not had to do before, and it's really huge, and they feel the pressure. And many of them are very angry that this law has been passed, and they tell us. So it's tough. It's really tough, but we're working with it, and we just tell them, you know, it's sort of out of our control. This is a law that's passed, and they need to work on it, and we're working on it. So
thank you.
Jackie Kirk-Martinez has picked up her mic, and we still haven't heard from Mr. Millar, who's been uncharacteristically silent. So we've got to get back to him and Amy. But go ahead, please, Jackie.
I just wanted to piggyback on Jane's comment about the high school exit exam for the board. If you aren't aware that the Chapman lawsuit resulted in a one-year reprieve for this year's seniors not required to pass the high school exit exam in order to receive their diploma. That's this year. And we have 11 students in our district, seven of them special education identified, who have 12th graders who have not passed the high school exit exam. The expectation is that they will continue to take the tests until June, but that we will not withhold their diploma if they have met all of the other criteria.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Millar.
Thank you, Mrs. Andreen. The reason I've been uncharacteristically patient is because I'm in awe of the depth of knowledge and commitment from you all. And as often happens on the board, when we are really anxious about something in our district, when we have a chance to sit down face-to-face with those of you who deal with it every day, it ends up being very reassuring for us, and it has been tonight. I have a number of questions. Some of them are pretty quick. What, if any, is the burden for you all tracking Medi-Cal reimbursement? I thought that would be a short question. It's a burden for all of you.
It's very time-consuming. It's very time-consuming, the paperwork. Janet Crabb has done a great job of streamlining it for us as much as possible, and they're very flexible with it, particularly myself, who always runs behind. But I can see the value in it for providing the service and the money that's coming to the district. So any additional hours to perform that task would be appreciated.
That's good to know. I noticed in my experience at the elementary counseling program that we would get a lot of kids who were self-referring. Do we seek out some resource? Is that generally yes? Okay. And I was intrigued by the inclusion of the student at the secondary level in the SSTs, which, you know, just makes great sense when after I heard about it. Can a secondary student, let's say a high school student, overrule his parents' failure to or decision not to approve the education plan?
No.
Do they try to?
Unless he's 18 or she's 18 or older, and then they have adult educational rights. And I always tell my students, as long as you're living under your parents' roof, I would think that they still have some rights whether you're 18 or not.
I tell my son Gordon that one all the time. Let's see, I'm trying to do these in a certain amount of order so it makes some kind of sense. In the Individuals with Disability Education Act, it requires us to make sure the parents and guardians know their rights and that those rights are protected. The elephant in the room for those of us on the board is the litigation environment. How do we balance making sure our parents know what their rights are versus our own needs as far as risk management? And I just want to say, though, the one thing I've been really impressed with all the discussions of special ed and litigation and all that we've heard a lot of the last few months is the commitment from our folks, you all, is to the success of the student. It's the, you know, it's us bean counters and where's Russell? And folks like us who worry about the litigation exposure. So I guess what I'm leading up to is how much of a burden is that for you all, because we're going to enter into an era that we'll be looking for more stringent documentation, more precise records that we have provided FAPE in order for us to be able to present our best case. And in the midst of us doing all of that, we can't lose sight of the student. So did you want to respond to that?
Certainly. As an obsessive compulsive person, I have no problem making sure my actions are defensible in a court environment. It's something I'm already doing. And I really believe that educators as a whole have a focus on doing it right and doing it.
And it's a genuine fear. Documentation is huge. We're very good at it. We're all very good at it. And actually, they don't need to be as tremulous as they are, but they are.
And I agree. I am queen of the paperwork. But in my 20 years, this has never happened to me before. And actually, I was excited to say something to you, Ms. Simon, about what can we do to help parents. Yes, there's a little manual, but when you're starting off, it's all about relationships. And you're giving it to them sort of holistically and then piece by piece. But this has never happened to me before. I've had two parents of kindergarten children cry this year when I handed them their 14-page font 6 parent rights. You know, and I just passed it. Here, just sign here, sign here. And they said, what's wrong with my child? This implied to them something huge and frightening. It is such a daunting task. So back to you, Mr. Spadafore. When you say what is my, you didn't ask me what my stress level is. Give me that microphone. But when you say, how do you deal with stress? It's like the things that are out of my control. And I'm looking at Jackie. She can't solve this problem. You know, we just live at RSLP meetings to go back and say, when I first started, it was a one-page parent right. And, you know, we can see how long we've been in the district. This is killing me. It's so nonlinear. Everybody asks questions, and they don't all get answered. So I'm like, what else? Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a question. And so I started actually with you, Mr. Malone.
Maybe you should come up here and run the meeting.
No, thank you. Bless you for the job you do.
We're pretty nonlinear, but I think one of the great things about that is that you're all feeling free to speak. And one of my colleagues has said we can't even scratch the surface tonight. And we are going to need to do a little bit more focused analysis probably and do another. No. But I would like to wrap up at 9 and with the promise that we'll revisit some of these issues after we focus in on areas where we think we can be of some help and areas where we think we need more info. Mr. Millar, you're going to have the last word, but
I have
someone's
a couple
coming
of
up
ones.
From the back.
Oh, okay.
Come on
I'd
up,
be happy
please.
To wait.
Please, please, please.
Would you get a mic, Kat?
So part-time I'm 80% at Baywood, 20% at Morro Bay High School. And sometimes it's really tough to make sure that I write those legally defensible goals that Jackie was talking about, that I make sure that I get all the little pieces done, and I work with the kids. Because for me, working with the kids is the most important thing. That's what it's all about. So I urge you to really consider the vulnerability that we as special educators and regular ed teachers too, they're stressed out about the state tests and then having to deal with these challenging kids. That's stressful too, believe me. But anyway, my point is about the resource specialists and the vulnerability that we as a district have when you place too much work on us, that we're going to let something go that we don't intend to let go because we don't have enough time to do it all. So I just wanted to bring that up. I thought that addressed what you were talking about. And, you know, Jackie could have had me be 50% at Baywood based on my caseload. And I have a full inclusion student it's very time consuming to make it work. And we're doing okay. We're making it work, but it's very time consuming. She kind of stretched the rules a little bit and let me be 80% at Baywood rather than 50%. If she had gone by the numbers, you were talking about stress, I don't know if I would have made it. So thank you, Jackie, but think about trying to make us 100% if you can.
Okay, thanks. And Dawn?
I was going to let it pass, but I have to chime in with Kathy's comment. Jackie said earlier, I think it's something like 50-some hearings are filed each week. Was that the number? And when you ask about the pressure, the stress of the legalese, I just want to say when you go through any kind of hearing with this, with all respect to those members of the board who are lawyers, lawyers have a way of taking the best written objectives and goals and IEPs and things like that and taking it so that it is a very stressful situation. And so no matter how well, it's to all of us. Thank you.
And my last question is, is there any equivalent to an ombudsperson either with the district, the SELPA, or COE that parents can go to as a resource or a friendlier way to find out their 14 pages of rights and provide the kind of support that the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act provides or requires us to do? Go ahead, Jack.
You're asking where can parents go to seek information, and there's multiple places, starting with the local school district. Program specialists, both of them can sit down and meet with the families individually. We have the individual teachers who will take time and meet with them and talk with them, help them to understand that 14-page nine font parents' rights. We have that resource the resource parents opportunities. We have program specialists at the SELPA office as well. The County Office of Education has resources at several school sites, and everybody is a phone call away. And that's what we want to do, is we want to educate the parents so that they feel comfortable walking on campus and going to the school site principal, the school counselors, the nurses. We all want to give them the information that they need.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. And I want to go to Amy Shields because she's been trying to speak for a while, I think.
I actually wanted to go back and clarify on two points that were made earlier. The first one was regarding violent students on our campus, which you wouldn't necessarily think is an issue in elementary. But I think it's important to note, especially because this is going out broadcasting to many, many parents, is that we do have authority and ed code on our side and available to us to deal with violent children, whether they have an IEP or whether they do not have an IEP. Even if we are in an assessment process or we're waiting or we're thinking about it or the parent is refusing assessment, the parent does have all, or the principal has many, many legal rights of not having unsafe or violent children on our campus, and we're fully aware of those and use those rights. So I think that is really important to be clarified. The second thing that came up, I think, earlier from Tony is the issue of training. This is my seventh year at C.L. Smith, and when I first arrived, I think we were one staff who were not necessarily highly trained special ed staff in the kinds of disabilities and issues and needs that we have now. It's been a complete change through our SELPA, through the state of California. There is a workshop every week you can go to about helping with sensory issues, autism, Asperger's, learning disabilities. It's choosing which are the best workshops to go to, what are the needs, who do we send, and of course, how do we pay for it. But the training issue has been a great improvement from many years ago, where we kind of jumped in feet first and learned by sometimes, you know, trying hard. But the training piece now is very much there.
Well, thank you. We have a priority to see that the resources, you know, that you tell us will make the job work better for you, for the students, and for the district are available. And I do think we'll have to revisit this. Mr. Spadafore, sorry for the demotion.
No, that's okay. I didn't deserve it in the first place. But I just would ask at the pleasure of the board that because of what's been presented to us from everyone who came tonight and discussed these issues, I have a suggestion, if the board feels that this is helpful, that Jackie would set up some way for everyone who's here tonight to bring those issues to her with recommendations, comments, so they can eventually come to the board so we can have that information in a more formal way to start preparing, to start addressing issues presently and in the future. So what's been done tonight just isn't lost, because I took notes, but I couldn't recall everything. And again, as I'm sure everyone else on the board feels, I have total respect for all of you for what you do, because it's difficult, and I can tell how dedicated you are. So thank you.
Thank you for speaking on behalf of the board. I know we all feel that way, and we're very, very proud of you and what you do, because you are really right out there on the edge, and we know it. Mrs. Roger.
Well, I want to support what John suggested, but also I had mentioned to Patty, just listening, you know, this is really special ed 1A for me. It's a lot to absorb. It's a huge issue for our students, our staff, our, as a board, the litigation aspect of it is big for us. And I really need a special ed one. Really surprised last time when I opened it up and said, you know, tell us what you need. They said we need another teacher at Pacific Beach, and I'll be damned, they have another teacher at Pacific Beach now. You guys had a huge opening to jump through, but maybe if we meet again, you'll jump through that opening and let us know.
If I can also add that San Luis would like more paraeducators.
Oh, she slipped right in. All right. Now, okay. You're the funnel. You're the funnel, madam. And it is after 9, and I would like to give you a chance to close, because you opened, and it's only appropriate that you close this wonderful session.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank everybody who attended, who's in the audience, as well as those who are here around the table. I want to thank each and every one of you for being a part of tonight's study session. Just like IEP meetings, we need to take little bits of pieces of the IEP. We need to provide you information at little portions at a time. I would be happy to work with, at the your request, small sections, a full day retreat, homework assignments, whatever you'd like. we'd be... And we will follow your direction. But again, I would like to thank everybody who is here tonight. And we do have multiple challenges. And feel free to email any concerns, issues, and I will gather them together for Dr. Valentine to pass on to you. Thank you.
Okay, we will take a break and let everybody take a breather before we get on to our consent agenda, which is so exciting, but I know probably most of you are leaving, so goodbye. All right, thank you. We will resume with our reports by school staff. Anyone from any of the sites wish to say something? Thank you. There are no students here tonight, so we'll move on to item 2, which is the status of the state budget. Mr. Miller?
Well, in the governor's budget, it has become apparent that for our district, the only thing we need to be aware of is the mandated cost outcome.
Every classified position every 5 years and review the duties and responsibilities of each position. Most often, and Mr. Spadafore would know, those just result in some changes in job descriptions, maybe changes in qualifications, and the Personnel Commission scrutinizes those, and we change the descriptions so that we're hiring properly and placing people properly in the jobs. Occasionally, rarely, the classification study reveals issues that are larger than just minor adjustments in job duties, and actually indicate big changes in responsibilities or experience or qualification levels. And that is the case for two items in front of you this evening. That's kind of the set for both item 3 and 4. The library job family consists of two positions, the library media center technicians and the library media center assistants. And through the Personnel Commission study, which will actually go back to the commission to for their hearing of all the recommendations, have some recommendation that have a fiscal impact. And so there's a little dance we do between the Board of Education, which has the authority to apply dollars to any issues, as well as policies that might affect any issues. The Personnel Commission has a responsibility to actually approve those and to more closely look at the actual job descriptions and spend quite a bit more time with those things than we ask you to do. But in the library media center technician, which is primarily those individuals that work at our elementary school sites, as well as the IMC and Pacific Beach High School, there are some recommendations that will have a fiscal impact. And they are that, and they are largely due to the major changes that we've seen over the last 5 years in those positions. These are individuals that have become virtually the technology mentors of our school district, and they also have extreme responsibilities for the supervision of students and the instruction of students with teachers. And the job description, as we went through it, really revealed some major changes that we think need some attention. One of which is to add the recommendations anyway that will go to the Personnel Commission are to add 2 days to their calendar year. They work a student calendar year, and so there virtually is no day to prepare for students coming or to clean up after students are gone. So it's an adding 2 days to the calendar at the elementary that individual have a job title change that would indicate the person being a career technician, a career center technician for a portion of their day because of the job duties that more closely resemble applying for colleges, working on scholarship applications, helping students with job searches, and those kinds of activities. The Library Media Center assistants is the other member of the job family for the library family, and we're also recommending similar changes there. These individuals work primarily at our secondary schools. The recommendation is to ask for a preferred AA status as far as a qualification. And again, significantly, a range change that represents a 5% differential. We'll also be looking at perhaps some sort of formula change for this group because the individuals at the secondary schools, our middle schools and high schools, have the same hour allocation for both Laguna Middle School and Los Osos Middle School and San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School, even though San Luis Obispo High School and Laguna are about a third larger than the other schools. So we're going to look at the formula to see if there's any adjustment there. What we're asking for you to do this evening is to support us going back to the Personnel Commission to study this longer. This is only a discussion item for you. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have, and we will bring this back for action consent.
That's a very clear presentation. Thank you. And it sounds like, you know, the job's really morphed and adjustments have to be made. My only question is that $31,000, is that all-inclusive or would that be times some multiplier?
That would be the total cost of all the recommendations except for any formula adjustment at the secondary level. So that would be taking care of all of those recommendations. If there was a formula adjustment, that would increase that amount. But because we haven't studied that yet to know whether we'll need that, it's everything else except for that.
Okay, that's the bottom line. Thanks. Mrs. Botwin?
Thank you for your presentation, and I move the recommendation as on the bottom of page 3.2.
Did you say, Mr. Robinette, that you had any further work that you wanted to do on this, or would you be happy if the board took action tonight?
Oh, it'd be wonderful if the board took action. We'll have to, the Personnel Commission will definitely have work to do, but if the board wishes to take action on the item, that would be fine.
The board part is okay then for tonight. It's ripe if anybody wants a second. Okay, motion by Mrs. Botwin, second by... So if the board doesn't have any misgivings about that, I think the motion and second would be to just go ahead and approve this tonight. Any other discussion? Mr. Unger?
Is this only on three, or is this three times?
The only question I have, Rick, is the recommendation was to take this back to the Personnel Commission with our blessing. Is that what you're asking this evening, or are you asking us to approve this in lieu of Personnel Commission action, or before Personnel Commission action. What would a decision we make tonight, how would that impact the Personnel Commission? I guess.
Great. Thanks for asking that. If your approval is for this actually to be approved for the Personnel Commission, as opposed to just a first reading and then we go back to them, it really makes no difference. The commission would not act in any way to accelerate this or increase this above this recommendation. We would need to come back to you if the commission said, oh, no, they should have a, 10% differential or something like that. That's kind of the dance we have to do between the board and the commission. But if you're giving it your blessing and your support, then this is what we would bring to the commission and say, this is what the board can support from a fiscal standpoint. And we would leave it to the commission and then to kind of do the fine tuning, especially with job description wording.
Okay, I think it's been well clarified. Is everybody ready to vote? Mr. Spadafore?
Just a question for Rick. Are we at all shortcutting the commission's role to take any input from staff or anyone else who may appear before them? That's the only thing I would be concerned about.
No,
cutting anybody off.
No, and we would be sure to, if there's any changes that would affect any fiscal oversight, we would be sure to bring those back before action was taken.
So you don't see any issues with classified if the board takes action tonight on this?
Oh, no. And in fact, this recommendation has already gone to the employee groups, and they've been made aware that this is going to be brought forward and that they will have the opportunity to either come here tonight or to come to the Personnel Commission, which is probably the more appropriate time to address any concerns.
Okay, then the motion, as I understand it, is to give a blessing to this proposal. And is there any public comment on that? Seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes unanimously. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. The next item is yours as well. That's the action on the classification.
We find that people use high-speed copiers, don't do as much offset printing. And so what we worked out with CSEA and with the district was to try to figure out kind of a medium between what we could outsource and what we could still do as a copy center. And the copy clerk position kind of took on many of the responsibilities that our printer did without doing printing. So we weren't asking this individual to become the district printer. But the copy clerk has taken on responsibilities that include purchasing and dealing with a lot of paperwork, with a much higher volume of work, even though not a workload, not an overtime issue, but a different quality of work. And when we looked at that class, we also realized that we were asking more of this position of copy clerk than was previously the case. And so again, our recommendation is not only to change the range fairly significantly from range 208 to range 217, which represents a pretty substantial raise in pay, but to also retitle the position from copy clerk to copy services technician, because clerks typically work under some supervision. This person works independently. We have a warehouse assistant that comes in and assists in the job, but the individual is not supervised by anybody else save Russell Miller, who I don't know how often Russell goes over to the copy center, but our copy copy services technician has been doing great work for us, and we believe that it's the position itself requires a higher classification. And this, again, would go to the Personnel Commission for oversight.
Okay. Any questions or comments by the board? Mr. Spadafore?
Just a quick question. The printer who retired then wasn't replaced.
Was not replaced.
And that salary and benefits went with the retirement, and now this person has been filling some of those job duties.
Yes.
Okay. Mrs. Rogers?
Well, I think maybe what Mr. Spadafore gave me an entree to is when I read things like many of the jobs that were previously done on the offset press by the printer are now done on the color copier. The volume of work produced by the copy clerk has doubled over the last year. When I see things like that, to me, I get the flag goes up about the speed up process.
Over time, is able to complete the work. I mean, part of it is getting a high-speed color printer into our system, and also kind of figuring out what we can better outsource to other printing services and what we can handle in-house has made us, frankly, quite productive. But it hasn't been a workload issue as much as it has been a responsibility issue.
And do you think that person would agree with your assessment?
Yes, and okay. She's been given our recommendation already also.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, Mrs. Dickinson.
Does this mean that we're not going to be looking for a printer anymore? I mean, does creating this job mean that, we're not going to have a printer and look for a printer? Because, I'm curious about the field of graphic design and all, and artists, and I would like there still to be, if, we have people that do printing and all, that we would still have opportunities for those kind of things in our district.
Our plan is not to replace our printer, is to use our existing resources because it seems to be adequate to our needs, but it would not be to replace a printer. We have not been recruiting a printer.
So I don't want to get too far off the agenda item here, Mrs. Dickinson. I think that's another agenda item.
Well, I'm just saying, if we're creating a new title and a new position, does that sort of like erases? I mean, we created this because we had a temporary need or something.
No, what we had was a printer that retired, and we did not fill the position. We're now recommending reclassifying our existing copy clerk to a new job title and assuming some of those responsibilities, certainly not all. I mean, it's not at the range of a printer, but assuming some of those responsibilities and the needs of the district and the way we're addressing those needs have changed. We are not recruiting a printer right now, and I don't think that is in our work plan to do.
Madam President.
Okay, I'll call for a motion.
Can I just ask one quick question?
Yes.
Of Rick? Is this another way of saying that technology has changed this area dramatically?
It seems that it's had a dramatic change on how we do business.
What I would ask then is I would make a motion. I would change the recommendation that's contained here and make a motion that the board, if there is no further need to return this to the Personnel Commission, that the board approve the recommendations made by the Personnel Department as set forth by Mr. Robbins.
8, acceptance of donations. 8 is disposition of surplus. 9 is approval of purchase orders. 10, you want to pull 10? Okay, Mr. Unger's pulling 10. That's the application for funding categorical aid programs. 11 is approval of Ag Vocational Ed Supplemental Grant application. And 12 is approval of the quarterly report on uniform complaint filings under the Williams Settlement showing no complaints.
I move approval of items 7, 8, and 9, and 11, and 12.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Number 7, donations.
Actually, number 5.
Number and 5 you pulled. Okay.
The question I had for number 5 is, I'm looking at the extra duty assignments where we're talking about coaching stipends. Where are we in looking at coaching stipends in regards to the CIF coaches training?
The training for the CIF requirement is by the end of 2008, all of our coaches have to be trained, and so we're still working on a work plan in order to bring a trainer of trainer models into our school district, where we will have probably 2 or 3 individuals who will be responsible for certifying all of our coaches well before that deadline.
What do you think that we'll be able to achieve that by next year? I have an interest in getting this coaches training on track and getting it going.
I'm not sure whether we would have that completed by like this time next year. My thinking is by the end of the 2006-2007 school year. So I guess by the end of next school year, we probably should be completed with our certification.
Thank you. Then I would move approval of item number 5.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second. by Mr. Millar. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Mrs. Dickinson, I believe you pulled the next item, board member salary.
I just wanted to have an opportunity for those of us whose salary is on there to be able to abstain.
Thank you. So that's Mrs. Dickinson. Mr. Millar, do you want to abstain?
I'd like to abstain from mine, but I'd like to vote on Mrs. Dickinson's.
Okay. Yeah. We'll split it up then.
Okay, let's do that.
Abstaining? Against? Okay, passes 6-0 with one abstention. And now we'll vote on Mr. Millar's. All in favor, or excuse me, do I have a motion? Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Rogers. All in favor? Aye. Abstaining, and anyone opposed? Passes 6-0, one abstention. Now Mrs. Roger, and she has two dates, January 10th and 17th. Motion? Motion by Mrs. Botwin, second by Mrs. Dickinson. All in favor?
Aye.
Abstaining? Aye. Okay, anyone against? Passes 6-0 with one abstention. All right. And those absences were for causes that our board policy recognizes as acceptable. Next is donations. Anybody pull that? Mr. Unger pulled item 10.
And the reason I pulled item 10 is that I think it's important to draw. This is the application for our consolidated grants and our categorical funding. And I'm looking at part two, and it's actually labeled page 29. And I just wanted to draw the public's attention to something in here. This is our district allocations of Title I funding and our percentage of low-income students. And I think it's important for people to realize that we have several schools that do have a high percentage of low-income students. Hawthorne Elementary School is listed as having 54, almost 55% of their students as low-income students. Pacheco is listed as almost having 51% of their students as low-income students. Del Mar Elementary in Morro Bay, almost 41% of their students. Baywood Elementary School, 37.6%. C.L. Smith, 36% as low-income students. Monarch Grove, 33.5%. And I think it's interesting to note that Monarch Grove at 33.5% does not get additional Title I funding. And then looking down, we have Pacific Beach at 32 and Los Osos Middle School at 31, and I'm not going to get down into the 20s. But I did want to make people aware of that fact, and now I would move approval of item number 10.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Spadafore. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0. All right, the next item is informational.
Sort of been a festering concern that's come to a head for me recently that I'm wondering if I can get board support to discuss conceptually. My concern is for, in the secondary schools, the high schools, trying to better reach children who are not being successful academically, and I don't know what we would pick, if we would pick the lowest 10% or 15% or whatever it would be. I think that we need greater intervention with these kids, and it's not news because it's something that I've talked about for a while now. I would like to look at the possibility of adding an additional counselor at each of the two schools. Initially, I thought that this counselor could work just with the lowest band in terms of setting up a record-keeping system with them where they'd be on weekly progress reports and what have you. But then I think that is really kind of micromanagement on my part. So I guess what I'd like to do is look at bringing on two additional counselors and having staff decide how best to distribute the work so that we are better serving this lowest band of kids. If they don't have parental support and we beef up what we're able to do and they're not successful, well, there's not much we can do about that. And if they don't have motivation, and we beef up what we're able to do and they're not successful, then there's not much we can do about that. But at least I want to feel like we did everything that we could do. So I would like to look at this whole issue.
I'd like to hear from administration whether that would be done as part of some other larger process. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, if I could. I think the suggestion is completely in line with the whole direction of looking at the strategic plan in the school district and where our priorities are, and certainly at-risk students is among that. The question, I think, if it's going to be thoroughly answered by the board, needs to come in two parts. Number one, what do we think about adding the counselors? And the second one would be, instead of what else would we do that? And in that context, it might be a very useful discussion.
Yes. Thank you, Dr.
Academic support for lower end types of situations. So it might be kind of interesting to see how those work first, because we're just starting those things, and maybe they'll help.
Mrs. Botwin?
I agree with Marilyn, particularly after our presentation tonight, listening to what they had to say and some of the problems they're running into. I think she's hit on a good point that might work for a good medium situation where our students would not only benefit, but also they would be available for these students that the first red light noticed by a teacher or a parent brought up or brought up by a counselor. And I think that's something that we might want to look at separately, get some information on it separately, and move on it. I'd like to see if we do something like this, that we do it in time for September, at the beginning of the year.
Okay. Mrs. Roger wants to follow through on what Dr. Valentine said.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just want to make sure I understood. At the end of what you said, did I understand you to say something to the effect of what would we, in essence, what would we be willing to give up in order to achieve this?
Yeah, and what would be the competing budget interests of the board in the same conversation as this budget interest?
Okay. Mr. Unger?
Well, I think one of the things that Mrs. Rogers concerned about, and I think I would speak for myself and perhaps many of the other board members, is when we, for example, when we unfortunately have to look at students that we're considering expulsions for, frequently they're in the lower, they have had more academic difficulties and difficulties in school, and I think that one of the concerns that she has and that I think perhaps other board members have shared is, what can we do to help kids not be expelled? And not become so severely credit deficient. And I know that's a bigger discussion, I think that
I just am concerned about process rather than about the propriety of the recommendation. And I was not on the board when the last, just as much as I really support what Mrs. Roger wants, I hate to just take a post-it and stick it on the budget and say, add two here or add three there, because we've kind of made a commitment to each other and to the district that we will have an orderly process in the allocation of our resources. And I would be willing to have information that would help us assess these things when it comes time to make the budget decisions, and particularly following through on, you know, identification of problems. But what is our cycle, and when will we again look at the big picture and establish our priorities for next year's budget?
We've typically started the budget process in around April and concluded it in June. I think we could accomplish all the interests that have been expressed here, i.e. that the proposal can be considered, it can be weighed against competing interests, and if it rises to the top, it can be acted upon by September.
Mrs. Roger, if we got to this in terms of an expenditure as part of the regular budget process, would there be something that you would need in terms of information from the counseling department ahead of that process that would address your need for feeling like we're getting somewhere with this?
Yeah.
In other words, do you want a study session on counseling needs as opposed to a line item in the budget? Because I personally feel it's premature to just take one line item for the budget ahead of the budgeting process.
Okay, I'll agree with you on that. I think I got everybody's attention. We have a problem with the lowest band of students that needs to be addressed. So whatever it takes, have the administration. I would like them to bring back a strategic plan for how to address the issues of these students. Can I get support for that?
You can certainly get support from Mrs. Botwin spoke support, Mr. Unger. I think it's been one of our goals as a board. It's been identified as a goal by the board for the last couple years, and we haven't seen the concrete progress that you'd like to see. Okay. Do you need anything else from us, Dr. Valentine, on that? Mr. Millar, did you want to say something on this item, or do you have another item? Would we be ready to move on to that other item? Mr.
Walt can go ahead of me. I have something I want to discuss that can come under either the advance agenda or reports by board members, so I'll wait for Walt, that I'll follow.
Enough with this conversation. Mr. Spafford.
All right, thank you. Walt was being very prescient, and he was just commenting upon what I'm going to say next. Thank you. I support what Marilyn's saying, but and I want to segue into something that isn't in the same vein, but I had a long meeting today with Sandy Sigurdsson, who's the director of the San Luis Obispo Symphony, and Jamie Lewis, who's the music education director, and they presently are partnering with the school district at C.L. Smith with a music program that's going to bring issues up before the board eventually regarding funding and applicability and success. So my question is this to the board and also to Ed and anyone else on staff who wants to comment. We're going to have maybe not just Symphony, but also Symphony and other community-based groups that may bring proposals to the board to partner in the presentation or integration of standards-based music and visual arts programs. There's going to be some suggestions. Would that be better as an advance agenda item or better with budget issues? And that's my question.
I think it would be hard to integrate it in the whole budget description because there are so many different things that would come forward, I think, through that process. I'm trying to think what the best way to make sure that the board gets the information it wants from community groups who want to partner with us.
There's an advanced agenda item, Ed, by the way, listed for music program review.
Yes, I believe Adrian requested that, and that might be a point in time to do that for the music piece of it. I don't actually have a generic answer, although I think the board should know about it separately in a sense and then feather it into the full budget discussion when that comes forward.
And then may I suggest, as far as an advance topic, that we combine visual arts with music if any community-based groups want to propose any standards-based integration that they want to offer to the district at some date that we establish, giving these groups time to bring these proposals forward and discuss with us.
Okay. Mr. Spadafore has requested that the music review include visual arts and an opportunity for community groups. Is there support for that? Mr. Millar, thumbs up. Okay. Dr. Valentine, anything else on that? Okay. Mrs. Dickinson.
Forum.
They may want more time than we normally allow.
They may want more time, but just so people know that. Yeah. People can come and talk to us about ideas.
Right. For a lengthier topic, though, we'd rather have it scheduled in advance. Okay. Anything else? Advance agenda. How about board reports? Mr. Unker.
And I may ask Mr. Buckman to come up here and help me with the dates on this. I believe February 3rd at 10 o'clock.
Yes, please.
At the Goleta Library, the Tri-Counties Education Coalition will be hearing a speech from presentation actually by Rick Simpson. And Mr. Buckman, if you can explain who Rick Simpson is and why it would be important for people to try to attend that, I'd appreciate that. And I will be attending as a board member of Tri-County's Education Coalition. Mr. Buckman is secretary of it, and Dr. Valentine is now also on the board of directors for Tri-County's Education Coalition.
This will be Rick Simpson's fifth visit to the Tri-County Education Coalition. Rick has been in and around the Sacramento scene for over 25 years and is currently the top aide to Fabian Nunez, the assembly speaker. He brings with him a wealth of knowledge. He brings with him a tremendous sense of humor, but he is also an early warning system for public education, and that attracts this particular meeting usually attracts about 90 people, and it's where we get a lot of the specifics about the state budget, and it's from Rick because he is so close to the situation. So when you hear about the big five going in, Rick is usually right there prompting those people. So this is just a tremendous opportunity to find out what's going on in Sacramento. And if you haven't attended a Tri-County Education Coalition event, this is the event every
year.
Would
you give us the date and time again, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. It's this coming February 3rd. It's 10 o'clock at the Goleta Library, and it will be over by noon.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Buckman and Mr. Unger. Anyone else? Mrs. Botwin.
Three things. Number one is the Personnel Commission tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Rick, I believe that's correct, isn't it, tomorrow at 4 o'clock? The two new commissioners will be not indicted. But
sworn
inducted. Okay, inducted. And I plan to be there just to welcome them, and we know how much fabulous work they have done over the years for us. And I think Walter, oh yes, now I recognize you. And she wanted to thank, and these were her words, wanted to thank the entire board, even though she knew it was basically a different board, for the enthusiasm, for the support that they had given to get her brother's posthumous diploma. And apparently at that time there was no policy for that kind of thing. So it didn't happen right away. But the board and the superintendent and the working together came up with one. And she said it made such a tremendous difference to her family, to herself, to her mother. And she felt that our Board of Education was something special. I thought you all would like that, as I did. And my last comment is, in the minutes, I saw here under informational in our minutes today that I had asked Rick for copies of the harassment policies and the uniform complaint procedure, that if he would just send them to us in our Friday packet, that we could look them over and then have some information presented in the agenda about how it's, what was it, Patty, we talked about, how it's, the information has gotten out to the public, how it's presented, and where it, the information is, so that we don't have, we just double check that we don't have any holes in our policy and the harassment type of thing.
Okay, does anyone want to have the policies included in the Friday packet? I'd be comfortable with just the numbers, because I think we can look them up ourselves. They don't have to be reproduced in it. Would that work for you, Mrs. Botwin? We all have the board policies. Just if they could be referred to by number, and then if it could outline whatever steps we take to make our employees aware of it. If there's any posters up or anything like that about how they deal with this kind of complaint. That would be good in the Friday packet then, right? Anything else? Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I announced to the board in the Friday packet that I'll be attending the ACSA Superintendent Symposium starting tomorrow. Rick can send, I wasn't going to do a Friday update this week, but Rick can send those things to you through Kim, and we're just sending numbers anyway, and Caroline will send hard copies.
Or you can wait until the following week. I think Mrs. Botwin's agreeable.
Is that right?
Anything else? Then I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move adjournment.
Mr. Millar has moved. Mrs. Dickinson has seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 7-0.